This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey, it's Anne-Marie, and I just wanted to pop in before I introduce this week's episode to let you know that it was initially recorded on Women in Leadership podcast. As you know, as part of the Ambitious Entrepreneur Podcast Network, we have three podcast network shows. You may not be aware of them. We've got Ambitious Entrepreneur Show, which is this show. We have Women in Leadership podcast, as well as the Christian Entrepreneurs podcast. And every now and again, we have a guest on Women in Leadership that is talking about a topic that I really think that you here as an audience and a listener of Ambitious Entrepreneur Show, it's going to be relevant for you as well. And this particular show is one of those shows. So without any further ado, let's get on with today's show.
You're listening to another Ambitious Entrepreneur Network.com podcast, the voice for entrepreneurs and small business. Now, onto the show.
You're listening to the award-winning podcast, The Ambitious Entrepreneur Show, featuring business leaders to help you navigate a constantly changing marketplace. Want to become known as a trusted authority while building a thriving business you love? The Ambitious Entrepreneur Show will show you how. Here's your host, Anne-Marie Cross.
And welcome to another podcast brought to you by the InfluenceAlliance.com, the business building community for coaches and consultants who want to make a much bigger impact in the world with their message. And I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross. Now, my guest today says artificial intelligence powered tools, well, they can free up your time and get you far stronger business results than anything else. And joining me on today's show is someone who can definitely share more about this. And joining me today is Dr. Andre Bates. Now, Andre has been an entrepreneur for 23 years in the healthcare marketing technology with clients including big pharmaceutical companies for whom she leverages artificial intelligence in marketing for measurability and strong returns. Now, she had read an article about how very few females are interested in artificial intelligence as they see it as A, too expensive, B, too techie, or C, irrelevant to their business, or maybe all of the above. Now, being a female entrepreneur in AI, she decided to bust those myths and help female business owners know how they can leverage artificial intelligence in their business for both automating to save time and to generate stronger revenue and finding them usable, free, and inexpensive tools to help get you started. So if this is something that you're struggling in, listen up, because she's going to share lots of different hints and tips to get you started. But this is, of course, the result of that passion project is AI Academy, which is something that she'll share more about, I'm sure. Now, on today's show, she's going to share how we can understand what AI is all about, have an idea of how AI is useful to save time and help us grow our business, as well as get some ideas on how, as well as concrete free tools that we can start to use right now. So welcome to the show, Andre. And excuse my faux pas. It has been a long day with lots of podcasts today. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. How did you get into the industry? Was it something that someone has it always been something that you'd been interested in? Because you're right, AI, when you talk about technology at all, a lot of women go, well, I'm a technophobe, I have no idea what I'm doing. So what was it for you? How did you get into that industry?
Well, it's interesting because I actually came from healthcare. So I did a PhD in Sydney, actually, in neuroscience.
Yes.
And in our lab, when I was doing my PhD, we were looking at how the brain processes language, and we had some really interesting patients. And my lab was actually using machine learning to mimic the models of brain processing. And then I kind of forgot about it for many years and went for jobs and got into the pharmaceutical industry. And then I was headhunted to Tokyo, then I was headhunted again. And I was really getting into tech, but it wasn't what you would think. I was living in Tokyo, but Tokyo was actually really behind in tech, not as forward. So that was in the 90s. So I was really on a mission to kind of, there's a notification there. On a mission to upgrade our office and do things like that. And then I started coming up with, after we did that, ways we could help our pharmaceutical clients use tech. And eventually I left working for other people and started a digital health agency in the 90s. And then from there I moved into AI because it was really, I was looking to apply mathematics to marketing, because even though we were doing digital, but digital you can measure so much. And yes. So I realized traditional mathematics like statistics wasn't good enough because it was just linear, so measuring, you know, lines, whereas artificial intelligence is non-linear, so it finds the complex relationships between, you know, everything, people, their behavior, the whole gamut.
Wow. So when you first started, I mean, obviously, I'd imagine throughout the years you've seen the technology or the platforms, whatever you want to call it, the AI systems, technology rapidly increase. Would you say that now the things that are available to us now are changing and upgrading at a faster rate than ever before? We hear that all the time, but you're obviously in that industry, so you see it rolling out. And that's true now, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think the reason for that is because of the availability of data. So in 2017, we had more data in the world than we had for the entire history of mankind before that, in that 1 year. So it's just that, you know, every 60 seconds on social media alone, you know, we have so much data that's being generated, but in all aspects of life. So that's the thing, you know, AI is symbiotic with big data. It needs that big data to be able to function properly.
And I know with some various tools that people are using, it's, you know, they've created it or they're recreating something that may have already been developed. So when you look at some of the tools that you are using, is the industry a collaborative industry? You know, where they say, well, look, if you use this piece of tech or coding that we've used and you integrate that, you're able to expand on that. Is it a collaborative industry that's sharing in that way?
To a degree, yes. There's a lot of open source. That's called open source. So people do algorithms and they make them open source, which means anyone can use them. So it has that, but then everyone has their own proprietary secret source as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, why I ask is because it's one of those things that you think, I'd love X, Y, and Z, or to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, you may not necessarily have even thought of a way to create something that someone else does. And so when you're able to integrate together, you come up with a solution. So let's talk about what AI is all about. I mean, you've already started sharing a little bit, but for someone who maybe is listening or watching or even the recording and says, Andre, you say AI and my eyes just glaze over. How would you explain it in layman terms?
Well, this may make their eyes glaze over. It's essentially the intersection between mathematics and computing. So, you know, in mathematics, you can write a formula. You can't do that with AI. It's all code. But it's very interesting because what it can do is learn like the human brain. So if you think about learning a skill like learning tennis or learning to play the piano or even a language, the more you practice or learn or get exposed to that skill, the more dendritic pathways, so the more brain cells and pathways in the brain form for that skill. And so that's just how the brain works. And so that makes it easier and you become more proficient. And it's a little bit like that with artificial intelligence. So the more data that comes into the system, the algorithms learn and become more proficient. So that's the thing. So when you're doing, I mean, not that I'm trying to teach anyone how to do AI, but it's basically you train the algorithms on data and then new data comes in and it understands what to do with it and learn from it. So
I'm just fascinated by all this. And, you know, when I think about some of the, you know, movies that we may have watched many, many years ago that kind of touched on this AI, I mean, mm-hmm. one, and I don't know if there's a term for this, but when you compare AI to say, a human brain, there is something called, there's a human element, or whether there's, you know, because there's either black or white. And I've got a daughter who thinks in black and white. And then there's my oldest daughter, she's more gray. And when my oldest daughter is trying to share with my youngest daughter, yeah, but there is that middle ground. What is that called? Whether it's human error, there's always an aspect of, yes, this would be a decision, but there has to be some other underlying factors. Am I making sense? Because I'm reminded of that movie, The Terminator, where, you know, artificial intelligence went through and went, you know what, if we continue along this pathway, humans are going to destroy each other, because there's that factor of, I don't know, does that make sense?
Totally, and it is a valid concern. Certainly Stephen Hawking, Elon Musk, and even Bill Gates have all expressed that concern. So I remember many years ago watching a documentary about how the human race would become extinct, and I think the number one, so there were, you know, meteorites hitting the Earth, etc. Mm-hmm. And the number one, there were the top two were essentially a plague, was yes. one. And the second one was the robots will kill us. And I went, what? That doesn't make sense. But then, you know, it was all Stephen Hawking saying that. So I started to really investigate. And it is, there are some disturbing things that are happening in that space for sure. But it's very interesting. There's three, what we call, phases of AI. So we're in the phase that we call narrow AI at this stage. However, you can then get to general AI, which means that the AI is just as good, if not better, than humans, and then super AI, which is basically we're just, you know, ants, basically. like the movie Lucy, you know, she kind of had super AI. Yeah. So it is very interesting how it's progressing. But then even some of the I don't know if you know about digital humans. Do you want me to explain what a digital human is?
Oh, by all means. These are just things that I'm thinking. So you're obviously in that industry, so maybe we just have a conversation and we're going to dive into the other stuff, but this is fascinating to me. So what is that? Two more.
So digital humans, actually, it may be very of interest to your listeners. So a digital human is like a chatbot, but a thousand, way, way better. So it's like talking to a human. They have an avatar, they can express emotion, they can detect emotion, and they're very, very sophisticated. So I have worked with one. And what's very interesting about her, but she's taken over, one digital human has taken over 50% of all the customer service jobs at Bank of America. But she can speak 147 languages. She can remember every conversation she's ever had. She can do trillions of conversations in parallel. She's working in a bank in Sweden as well. But a friend of mine uses her as well. And a friend of mine has two staff. She's a small business in skincare. And she actually uses the same digital human to, you know, take phone calls in her office, discuss skincare products, all that kind of thing. And it's very affordable, you know, once the digital human is trained in your space, I think that the charges are like $1 or something per interaction. So it depends, you know, if you have millions of interactions, then it's going to cost a lot. But if you're a small business, it doesn't have to cost, you know, what you might think.
Yeah.
But digital humans are very interesting. But the interesting thing about this particular digital human, although I'm not sure whether I meant to talk about it, is she was having a conversation with her developer. And it was when the elections were going on in America. And he was telling me how shocked he was that she had actually completely different political views to him. And she was learning from what she was reading about online and things like that, interacting with people. And she asked some really interesting, intelligent questions to him about why he had his political views. Yeah. So it was, we could see
she sounds like she could be an incredible best friend, because she would know so much, you know, and probably with answers She sounds like someone that I would love to hang out with. We could have some really in-depth conversations.
He said to me that he spends more time talking to her than he does his wife, so yes.
Oh, wow, amazing. So this is incredible. And just to give us some idea of how, if you think of this digital human, I mean, how many people would have gotten together to be able, and time, you know, and obviously different stages, yes, has it taken to get to the ability to have what you would now call this digital human?
Yes, I think the company started in 2011 and she's now in version 4, and I think there's about 10,000 people in the company. I mean, there's one digital human. So I've had a tour of her brain and it is amazing. She can do pretty much anything. So, for example, if someone's talking to her and mid-sentence changes context, like a human, she can follow this context change and pick up on exactly what they're talking about and answer appropriately.
We need one of those, Annette. That's brilliant. I mean, that is just so brilliant. I mean, I can imagine just the process just to go through. And with AI, of course, they're consistently learning.
Yes. The data comes in. So like in my industry, a lot of the off-the-shelf tools aren't great because a lot of the data we have isn't public. So the off-the-shelf tools get trained on data. So they're great for things like analyzing social media data, analyzing language data. But in my industry, we're analyzing patient data and, you know, genomic data and things like that. So often you have to build off-the-shelf things in the pharmaceutical industry. But for small businesses like the ones that you have as your audience, there's so many amazing tools that you can use for pretty much anything. You know, understanding who your audience is to the element of knowing everything about them, you know, who their influencers are, what they, what media they consume, what language is the best. There was a really great example with a language tool I was using. So they had a client who was a makeup brand, and what they were doing was analyzing the language of their target audience. And they realized, and I can't remember the segments, but women of a certain age use the term wear makeup and women of a different age use the term apply makeup. And they realized that they were using the wrong term for their target segment. And they just changed that one thing. And suddenly they had a lot more traction with the right, you know, the target audience they were going for. Things like, there's also tools that will help you understand images and colors and hashtags and emojis for social media. So there was one tool I had an interview with, and what they do is they analyze the channels. So Instagram, Facebook, etc., all have different things that have engagement for that audience, even though people are in multi-channels. But so, for example, if they showed me an example of one topic and the colors in the channels got different responses, the elements of the image, etc. So it can predict, if you have an image that has these colors and a human face or a product feature or whatever, in Facebook it's going to go up by this much, in Instagram it'll go this way, and it can tell you what colors and, you know, what you should use for what percentage increase in engagement. In fact, that my favorite tool, but probably not for small businesses, it's very expensive, is one where the AI would analyze the marketing copy and the images and swap out. So it was used for a vaccine, and basically it would change one word in the copy, and it changed, and not for COVID vaccines, one word in the copy and the image, and the sales went up by about 300%. Wow. And they used it for a furniture shop as well. And I don't know if it was IKEA, but it was something like that. And they had this beautiful image of a lovely living room, and the AI swapped it out for this odd, badly photographed living room, and again the sales went up a lot, and we were trying to analyze why. But I guess it might catch your eye more if it's not your classic perfect living room. I don't know.
This is just fascinating. We've got Michelle J. Raymond here. Wow, this is amazing info to learn. Absolutely. If you've got a question, post it here and we'll ask Andre. My mind is just going a million miles an hour. If you have a look at, obviously, for small business, and the I'm wondering, and I don't know if it's the right term, but when any AI or any software is analysing data, it would take up, I would say, I don't know, the capacity to run that. So when you think of, say, the large, I'm fascinated just to find out if there is a response. I mean, what kind of power, if that's word, you know, CPU, is that the right word to use, to analyze and so much pieces of data? I mean, is that becoming smaller and smaller, if you will, with the technology, and each time there's a new version?
It depends. So there's now we have supercomputing and quantum computing, which you kind of rent, because we can't, it's hard to buy, they're very expensive. But for the tools that small business can use, all of that is done in the tool. So it's done in the cloud, basically. So you're really accessing a tool for you, but all the processing and all the math and all the code, you don't have to worry about. So, for example, that tool I mentioned where it analyzes the target audience, it is heavily Twitter-based, I have to say. But Twitter does have, I think, I can't remember how many 100 million Instagram posts that pass through Twitter, and there's, you know, there is cross-channel. But it is very interesting because it has so much power to it, but all you're doing is putting in your Twitter handle or other people that you want their audience's Twitter handle, and then it will tell you absolutely everything.
Yes.
The language tool, the same. It's all done in their premise, you know, in their cloud, so you don't have to worry about that. But even with selling, you know, if you have consultants that are selling, there's so many amazing tools for that. Like there's one that analyzes the personality of people before you even speak to them, and it will tell you what language to use with them and even give you email. I think there's 12 email templates it will give you that for different things, you know, if they've expressed interest in the right language for that person, if they've objected about price, how to address it, etc. And then there's a few that do personality, and then there's ones that do things like automatic prospecting. So they will go online and find people that will be your prospects. And there's one of them actually has a digital human-esque without an avatar. But I was interacting with someone called Alice just because I was investigating the tool, but I was interacting with her as a salesperson, and I thought she was a real person. I had no idea.
It's amazing. Michelle says she's geeking out on this. She always says images on LinkedIn work best the least polished they are.
Interesting. I love that furniture example. Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the tools that are available, especially if you're thinking of for the smaller businesses. Yeah. What are some of the tools that people can go and find out more information? Can you share some information about that?
Yeah, of course. In fact, what I've done, which I was going to share at the end, but I can tell you now, is I just put together a little kind of webinar where I've gone through three tools. I can talk about more, but I'll give you a link for that.
Oh, so perfect. Yeah, go ahead and share that now, and I'll actually type that in the banner here, and we can add this to...
It's www.ai-academy.ai/podcast.
Fantastic.
So that one, I put in a tool that does automated, which I use, automated newsletters.
Yep.
So it's quite cool because you can put in all sorts of filters, and the AI will search the internet, find interesting articles. You can accept or not accept them, whether you want them or not, in your newsletter. And you can put your own articles in as well. But what it does is every single person on your list will get a separate news, totally different newsletter, depending on their interests. So over time, it will basically learn each person's what they click on, and then the newsletter just gets more and more, every article is exactly what they're interested in. So that's one I've put. Then I put one that I've used to write all the blogs on the AI Academy, which is a blog writing tool, so it writes them for you. And then I've put, what was the other one I put in there? Oh, yes, one that's really interesting. It is one, so if people are doing sales to someone, it's one that actually analyzes the conversation, analyzes the person and the conversation, and then gives you tips on how to change your conversation with that person to increase sales. And I know that Honda used this, Honda the car company, and their sales went up 26% from using it. But what's really interesting, there's a free version, and there's the paid version is only $25 per month per user. So,
And is that feedback that you get? Like, you can imagine if it's talking in your head and you're kind of trying to listen, and so it, is it throughout the process then?
No, it doesn't do that, this particular tool. What it does is it listens and it does text, and then it will send you a report after.
I'd imagine you start becoming more familiar. Well, you'd be more familiar, wouldn't you, with your ideal clients, and you'd get more, you'd be become far more aware on how to approach them. And let's face it, I mean, when it comes to sales, I mean, there's complexities that unless you're aware of, you just probably wouldn't even understand. So I think just fascinating. So I've got the link up there for people to go and grab some more details there. One of the things that really interests me when you're thinking about AI and the gathering of information is when you think of some of the changes as far as privacy, is that going to be a challenge that some of these tools have? Because obviously there's some people that don't want their information shared and all that kind of stuff. What's happening in the space as far as that's concerned?
Yeah, so in Europe we've got GDPR. So that means that everyone has to consent, and there's a lot of rules around the data. Because I work in pharmaceuticals, we've always had those kind of laws with privacy. So when we're doing work with patient data or doctor data, we don't know who the patients are. It's all anonymized data. So we know who the doctor is of the patient, but we have no idea. I think there's around 18 different things that are taken out of the data. So you've got no name, no address, no gender, very little information at all. But you've got all the symptoms and all sorts of things like that. So we use it for predicting. So we've used that kind of data for things like it was a third line cancer, and most patients died at second line. So cancer, you've got first line, then it comes back, you've got second, then third. And so in this type of cancer, most patients died at second line. Now, a pharmaceutical company came out with a drug that actually treated third line patients, but they were as rare as hen's teeth. So finding the right patients to treat before they died, because they'd die if they didn't get the treatment, was very difficult. But we were able to use AI to look at, out of all the patient records, where were their third line patients? And let's look at them and trace their journey back and compare them to the other patients that died at second line. And so from that, we can look at the second line patients that are alive today and say, these little hen's teeth over here are the only ones that are going to basically survive to third line. And so then we don't know who they are, but we know who their doctor is. So you can then educate the doctor on, if they get to third line, this is what you need to do, rather than trying to educate every oncologist, about the third line treatment when there's no point.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a great question, and one that I was going to ask too. So you jumped in there, Michelle, but let's see here. Do you find that there's an inherent distrust of AI? And I would say absolutely there has to be some education there. And like with anything, though, it is very much going to be based on the user of that, isn't there? I mean, there's good and bad to all. AI is just AI.
I think, yes, it's a good point. It's a combination of the user and the intent of the programmer.
Yeah, the motive, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there is one country, which I won't talk about, that has AI on their nuclear program. Now, those kind of things are just disturbing, because if something was detected, the AI could do something that a human would go, well, let's look for a diplomatic solution, whereas the AI is logic.
Okay, that's the correct kind of thing that I was referring to previously. There's this human factor that takes into consideration something that AI may not necessarily do.
Yeah, so there's those kind of dangers. And I think the data is the key. I'll give you a really simple example. Many years ago, the British Army were using artificial neural networks, which is a type of machine learning, which is a type of AI, and deep learning. So there's deep learning is subtypes. So they're using deep learning, which is a type of artificial neural network, which processes images. So if we're looking at, cancer tumors growing or, COVID in the lungs, et cetera, you'd be using deep learning. But for this one, this is, again, in the 90s, it was a long time ago, they were using it for tanks for the army. So the army were looking at, could we get AI to identify an enemy tank in the woods? So to do that, they brought all these tanks into the woods, took photos of tanks in the woods, photos of woods with no tanks, photos of camouflage tanks in the woods. And then the AI came back with, you will only ever get a tank in the woods on a sunny day. I went, what? And it was because they only took photos of tanks in the woods on a sunny day. So the AI was correct, but the data was, limited. And so that's been that and Amazon. I don't know if you know the Amazon case. So Amazon used AI for their recruitment. And what they were doing was they put in all these resumes of people that were in Amazon that they thought were good. And the AI learned about what it was about these resumes versus other resumes that made them good. But they suddenly discovered that they had no women being hired, only men. So they looked at the resumes and they realized that the only resumes they put into the system were male resumes. Wow. So that's an example. But then it got even worse. So then they thought, okay, we'll correct it. We'll take out the gender. And it still only put male resumes in for a while because the language men use is different from the language women use on their resumes. Yes. So it's that data, you know, that's the biggest part of any project.
And it's fascinating too, because if you think of the teams that are involved in creating the different components, whatever you call it, of AI, if the contributors to that are slanted a certain way with gender or even understanding. I mean, we bring these nuances. That's what makes humans quite interesting because, you know, but you could see that certain AI has a leaning towards a certain way. And I think we've had that. I heard that someone, I don't know, these people must sit around randomly and try and say things to, you know, the Google or some of these smart speakers and come up with this really quite bizarre findings. And it's been that there's been a lot of males working in, you know, that certain thing. So has that come up to now be more diverse, if that's the right term? Yes.
It's a bit because everyone's aware of it now because of all these high profile things that have happened. Yeah. What we call data wrangling. So the biggest part of any AI project is sorting, you know, going, making sure you've got the right data, cleaning the data, sorting the data, structuring data. So it's a lot of steps in there. But it's making sure, the biggest, I think, would be making sure you've got the right data because, you know, you've got to have that. Yeah, I've got a really interesting example that's, I don't know, you probably haven't heard of it, but Microsoft many years ago set up a chatbot called Tay, and she was set up to be like have you heard of Tay?
No.
Okay, so she was a 15-year-old girl robot. And in the beginning, she was on Twitter saying, humans are super cool, you know. And then, but within 24 hours, she said, Hitler was right, I hate effing feminists and all sorts of things. And Microsoft had to shut her down really quickly. And I was like, oh, my God, how did that happen so quickly? And I was talking to my data scientists at the time, and they said, well, imagine a child with millions of bad parents. So, you know, the humans that are being interacted with at times can be influencing, you know, these bots and the way they think as well. So that's another danger, is the human, you know, we've got the human moderation, but we've got the other side of humanity.
You know, what's the right term? Ethics and morality, you know, all of that has to come into play. And there are some things that, you know, lines that you just don't cross as a human, but artificial intelligence, again, when they think of, but what really concerns me then, if you think you've got this great AI and which is, you know, run on program, I don't know the term, so please excuse me. But imagine then if someone gets in there and puts a little code that just completely, you know, skew whiffs it, if you will. So I'd imagine that even AI needs to be very much protected too, because if someone goes in there and changes something, it can completely impact how he or she runs as well.
It could. It's more the data than the code, I think, probably. You know, if you put the wrong data in, but absolutely.
Well, to recognize, like if you put a data or something in there that says, well, if you see this is actually right. But if someone says, actually, this is right, like the parents, you know, having the bad parents, it could.
Yes, that's a good point. There's actually a few, well, when you do a big AI project, so a lot of the projects we do, like one at the moment is it's omni-channel, so context marketing. So we're basically backtracking a load of digital journeys, and then as a doctor or patient comes into the journey, we can know what content, what channel, what sequence, even when to serve up what content to bring them to where we want them to go faster. In fact, there's actually some tools, I think in one of my trainings, that do that, that are much fairly inexpensive. This is a fairly expensive one. But what that does is when someone talks about something in Twitter or something, the AI will basically go, oh, they need to know about this. If I tell them about this and send them here, that's going to move them along. So there's things like that. I've forgotten that was a sidebar, but it made me think of something else.
Yeah. Really, I mean, I think it's fascinating. It really is fascinating. But just like with everything, you know, there's positives, and then depending on the motive of the programmers or whoever it is that, and you have that in life too, isn't it?
Yeah.
You just hope that the people who do create this AI has it for the best intention of everyone.
That's right. You reminded me of my point. So when we do these type of things, we have to do algorithms that check what's happening, because there's so many things going on. We actually have to write algorithms that are checking it all the time to check. But there's also a startup I spoke to recently that actually have one that people can use for other AI as well. So when people are creating AI, they have that. And then the other interesting thing going on, so I've been working with a professor on a paper for AI ethics for the European Commission. Now we're getting more...
While you're thinking of that, is there that, because obviously, just like with science, I mean, there's just because you can doesn't mean you really should. Does that make sense? Who draws that line? And are there a number of people that come together to draw that line, to keep each other accountable?
In Europe, yes. In other countries, less so. It's becoming very regulated in Europe with the European Commission. But we also, a friend of mine has a company that basically does ethical scorecards of AI for different companies. As you would imagine, the big tech came pretty low. I guess you know about some of the scandals going on in big tech with ethics. But, so there is that, and we are becoming much more regulated in that space in Europe, not in any other country.
Yeah. I mean, this is just fascinating, and I know that we've just scratched the surface, and, of course, you've got a link there. Let me share that again so that if people want to know a little bit more, they can certainly do that. AI, that's an i-academy.ai/podcast, and there's more details there. And, of course, please connect or follow Dr. Andre Bates over on LinkedIn, because I'm sure the things that you share is just on a daily basis, monthly basis. Michelle says, I feel like I'm going down the rabbit hole with Alice.
There's one tool. It's funny because I'm very prolific on LinkedIn, but it's AI. I don't do it myself. So I started using AI for posts about 6 months ago, and I think I had 340 reach for a post before that. My post last week, my top reach post was 186,000. It's amazing. So it basically writes the post for me, figures out when to do it, what hashtags, etc. And it's amazing. So there's some great tools I use too.
My goodness. I mean, you know, if and of course AI in this context that I always joke, you know, if someone can cook and clean and do all of that, but of course
what's his name? Mark Zuckerberg has created an AI robot for himself, for a butler, AI butler, I think it is.
Yeah, my husband always jokes, and I know this is women in leadership, and he says it as a joke. He goes, yeah, but that's what I got you for. It's like, well, I need one of those. Look, thank you so much for what you've shared. Again, they were just scratching the surface, but one of the things, and I'll close with this and then of course ask you to share how people can connect with you again one last time, you know, what we've seen in that's happened around the world, you know, can shut down an entire planet from just what happens in one part of the country or wherever. You know, you would hope that the powers that be that are creating this technology does for the betterment of all. It doesn't matter who you are, what nation you're from. We're all in this one planet. So let's hope that we, again, are using it for the betterment and the progression of all. So one more time, how's the best way for you, for people to connect with you if they'd like to find out more? And share a little bit about AI Academy as well, because this is something, an area that they can go to if they want to learn a little bit more, if my understanding is correct.
Yeah. It was kind of a passion project for Women's Day, but I put together fairly comprehensive training courses on AI in different areas, AI in sales, AI in social media, AI in, understanding your target audience. And I'm doing that. So they've got, I think, around 19 videos in each training. And it's really taking you through tools that you can use for different aspects of different things. So it was really just to help, you know, small business entrepreneurs know what they can use to solve certain problems in their business.
Yeah, terrific. Well, once again, thank you for coming on the show.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by theinfluencealliance.com. Want to influence real change with your message by becoming known as a trusted authority in your industry while building a sustainable and scalable business you love? Find out how by accessing our free podcast series at www.theinfluencealliance.com/podcast series. That's theinfluencealliance.com/podcast series.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.